Ladies and gentlemen, if I could have your attention, please. It is the appointed time for the meeting tonight. I am aware that a number of people are still coming. I've asked the town clerk to check, and no doubt the parking problem is the reason for their lateness, but I do feel we must proceed, and hopefully those people will get in as quickly as they can. But I do welcome you here tonight, and I would ask first of all the town clerk if he would read the notice of meeting for tonight.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. This is a notice under the heading of the City of Melville, which reads, "Notice is hereby given that a special meeting of electors will be held in the main hall of the Civic Centre, Almondbury Road, Ardross, on Monday, 7th February 1983, commencing at 8:15 p.m. for the following purpose: to discuss the proposed redevelopment of the Majestic Hotel site, Lot 20, Fraser Road, Applecross. It is signed by K.R. Lewis, the Deputy Mayor." Mr. Mayor, ladies and gentlemen, this notice was published in the West Australian Local Government Notices on the 22nd of January 1983, a feature ad on Saturday the 5th of February 1983, another feature ad on Monday the 7th of February 1983, and in the Melville Times under General News on the 26th of January 1983.
Well, thank you, Mr. Town Clerk. I do want to say, ladies and gentlemen, that the only reason that we're sitting up on this stage here tonight was to make sufficient room for you down below. Otherwise, we'd be down there also. But I do want to ask the Town Clerk if he'd now introduce to you the various members of the council, the officers and others that are on the stage here.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. It's my privilege to introduce, from the right, Councillor David Dale of the Applecross Mount Pleasant Ward. Councillor Ray Ames of the Applecross Mount Pleasant Ward. Councillor Trevor Knowles of the Southern Ward. Councillor Dudley Hartree of the City Ward. Councillor Harry Stickland of the Victon Adderdale Ward. Councillor Gil Ewers of the Palmyra Melville Ward. Councillor Brian Clooney of the Victon Adderdale Ward. Councillor Mrs. Betty Rowe of the Victon Adderdale Ward. Councillor Mrs. Pam Orman of the Palmyra Melville Ward. Councillor Dr. Ian Guy of the Southern Ward. Councillor Clive Robartson of the Southern Ward. Councillor Tom Quirk of the City Ward. And Councillor Geoffrey Baldock of the Applecross Mount Pleasant Ward. Behind me, sir, is the City Engineer, Mr. Laurie Wills. The City Planner, Mr. John Trelaw. The Senior Planning Officer, Mr. Geoffrey Broad. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, since the demand to convene this meeting, it has been put to my notice that a number of people have been concerned as to how the meeting will in fact actually be conducted. I'd like to let you know that the procedures under which I intend to conduct this meeting are as follows. Firstly, the provisions of the Local Government Act and the Council Standing Orders bylaws promulgated under this statute must be applied. Secondly, any person speaking during the meeting and voting upon any motion advanced to the meeting must be an elector of the city. An elector is a person whose name is shown on the electoral roll of the city. If anyone is not certain about that, there are rolls where you are signing on there, the way you can check. It is also my desire to accept people in good faith, and no individual validation of the enrolment of the speaker will be made this evening. However, all speakers will be recorded with their names and addresses, and validation will be undertaken prior to the council receiving the record of the meeting. In other words, tomorrow there'll be a complete check of those people who did in fact speak so that it can be certain that those people who did speak and eventually vote are in fact electors of the city, within the city. I therefore request that you return my good faith by acting in a proper and qualified manner. Thirdly, all speakers will be required to approach the microphone, microphones which are placed, I hope, conveniently round the room here for you to be able to speak. And would you please state your name and address so that this can be quoted and recorded prior to you actually speaking. I do want to say also that no speaker will be permitted to speak on more than one occasion on each subject or motion, and all speeches must be limited to a maximum of 10 minutes, unless, of course, the meeting grants leave of absence for an extension of time. Any vote to be taken may be by a show of hands, that is, electors only, that's in the first instance, but if a division is called, preparations have been made to enable this division to be appropriately recorded, and the names of addresses of the persons voting in the affirmative or the negative will be taken. I do want to emphasise again that the speakers and subsequently voting is for qualified persons only, and I have definitely avoided the segregation of electors and the public within the hall in the best interest of and comfort of all of you here tonight. It is intended that a description of the proposed development will be given by a qualified member of the Bond Corporation, and I shall then immediately invite Mr. Dr. Mendelwitz, the chairman of the subcommittee of the City of Melville Ratepayers and Residents Association, to address the meeting, followed which by which you may then, any elector, proceed to ask questions or speak on the various subjects throughout the evening. So it is my intention now to call Mr. Peter Beckwith from the Bond Corporation, if he would please address this meeting.
I don't know, Mr. Mayor, whether you'd like me to face the body of people or talk here, but I guess facing this way will do. Fine. My Lord Mayor, councillors, officers of the council, ladies and gentlemen. Peter Beckwith is my name. If you can't hear me, please let me know at any time. I have a habit of wandering away from the microphone, in particular when I read from something that's prepared, as opposed to giving a speech, as it were. I am a director of Walton's Bond, and Walton's Bond, as most of you, I guess, know, is in fact the owner of the land, well known as the Majestic site, and I'm also a managing director of Bond Corporation. Firstly, let me thank you for A, coming along yourselves, and B, giving me the opportunity to talk to you. It's encouraging to me that so many people have come along, interested people, who obviously genuinely want to find out the precise facts, the truth about what it is that is intended for this majestic site. It is, of course, such an important site, not only to the city, but to the state of Western Australia as a whole, because almost all Western Australians can see the site from one part of the river foreshore or another. And so it is quite important to us all. It seems to me that, in fact, a lot of people are, in fact, under misconception about what the development will mean to their own lifestyle, and I'm talking particularly of the people within the Melville Council area. What I hope to show you very clearly, that the development proposed will do nothing other than enhance and even improve, if that's possible, the kind of lifestyle that you have, which is obviously in the City of Melville very attractive. I'd like to assure you absolutely that the kind of development we plan on this magnificent, majestic site is the sort of development that I'd certainly be very happy to live in myself, and I'm sure as matters unfold, some of you putting the thing in its proper perspective will feel likewise. We want to do the site proud for ourselves. We want to do the site proud for you too, and for the people of Western Australia as a whole. So perhaps if I may, I'd just like to track back a little bit to the beginning, which is always a good place to start, of course. We have, in fact, been terribly keen to do the right thing by the site. We knew that it had, in fact, been the subject of a number of discussions before we became the owners of the site, and we believed that the right thing to do was to seek out the best brains available to us in the country in terms of planning and architectural brains to see that the best, unbiasedly the best use of the site could be made. And so late in 1981 we conducted, as I guess most of you know, a national architectural competition to see what the best designers, the best architects and planners in this country, not just in Western Australia, but it was a national competition to see what they could come up with by way of a concept for the site, within clearly the criteria that we believe to be those that the ratepayers of Melville through their council might see to be as an enhancement of this site. Obviously the two criteria, or the three criteria, were that it did enhance the site. Secondly, that it would be judged on both architectural and obviously the question of economic viability. We then had a panel of independent experts, and I stress independent experts, who chose the winner of the competition, and the winner was in fact a hotel scheme. I might say at this time that a material factor in the selection was the fact that we required a building and felt that a building was appropriate that could in fact be constructed, and inasmuch as the site was in fact and is in fact zoned for a hotel seemed to be the right choice, given that there's no purpose in schemes that won't go. There's no purpose in putting forward schemes that aren't capable of being built. There's no purpose in that for us or for the community at large. And clearly, the choice was to some extent influenced by the fact that a hotel could in fact be built because that was the way the site was zoned. What I'm trying to point out is that the original hotel scheme wasn't something that was dreamt up by one of the fellows in our back office, that he dreamed up in his spare time and was picked up. It was in fact the result of a nationwide search for an appropriate development for this unique site. There were, however, objections from ratepayers in the area, objections about height and shadows, of course, traffic flow, parking, wind tunnels and bad driving that sometimes some people might associate with the type of development that was being proposed. You name it. It's the old story. It is the old story. Whenever you try to do something positive, there are those who object. There are some people who seem to be professional objectors rather than professional doers. The winning scheme, therefore, was rejected by the council, although we were perfectly satisfied on legal advice that the rejection could, of course, by virtue of the zoning, be overruled. But we didn't want to be unreasonable about the thing. We wanted to see something that put there, and this has always been our desire, that as Western Australians, in the long term, we could feel was something that was worthwhile and something that we could live comfortably with and feel was a contribution, because as Western Australians, we live here, we're going to continue living here, we want to contribute as well as seek, what I said before, economic viability. ratepayers held a meeting and had discussions with the council. I'd like to point out that it was in fact the ratepayers themselves who said that they would like the site to be rezoned residential. And so, in fact, in terms of the ensuing schemes, we compromised substantially from our original position, and what we came up with was the second place scheme in the competition, which was a residential development. The scheme was totally different and seemed to eliminate all the objections of and be consistent with what we understood was what the ratepayers were seeking. Apart from being residential, it had two attractive restaurants and so on, and we can go into the details for you in terms, and I'm sure those of you who are genuinely interested in what it is that is currently being put forward here have in fact taken the trouble to inspect the plans and the small model that here in front of you. We did in fact also cut down considerably in discussions and quite detailed negotiations the proposed number of units in the development that was put forward, and we cut down from 230 units to 142 units. I can assure you that at this level of 142 units, the economic viability is being pushed to its limits. It's a fact of life. Thank you. Thank you very much. So, ladies and gentlemen, so that the ratepayers as a whole, those who were generally interested in what was proposed here, could in fact get a proper idea of what was involved, we in fact invited members of the Ratepayers Association to look at the scheme, and we did in fact put the scheme on display in the Melville City Council Hall. I trust that a great number of you did in fact take the trouble to look at that, and so that the speculation, in your minds at least, wasn't there because you'd been able to see quite clearly. And we've been pretty unhappy continuously because we keep on getting stories about what people think we're doing and proposing to do, which is quite different from the fact of what is before you here tonight, which is the scheme before council. It is in fact a very high quality residential development, and for the gentleman up the back, this is what we're proposing. We are proposing a very high quality residential development, which we believe is befitting the site. There is no hotel. There is a small tavern of, if you like, the English pub style that's designed for the residents of the environment created. It is most certainly, as I said before to you, not one of those that will have the problems of the cars and the rushing up and down. It will, in fact, be something that most certainly I think most of us here would be very, very happy to be living in. Scheme doesn't have the problems of the giant tower casting shadows over the houses. The apartment block that you see on the plans here is sited well down the block, so that there is no interference at all in terms of visual or shadows to local residents. You may not be aware of this, but 20% of the site has been allocated for public use, which is, of course, part of what is private land. I'd like Mr.
Your time is up, Mr. Beckwith.
I see. May I just conclude quickly?
Quickly, you go, please. All right.
Thank you very much for that indulgence. Might I just say that we do have the architect and the town planner here who will answer questions if you like. In the meantime, what I believe is happening here is that you've been invited along to ratify or reject a decision of your council. We believe that the council has negotiated a very tough deal with us. We believe, therefore, that you should support that decision.
Thank you, Mr. Beckwith. Dr. Mendelwitz, would you like to speak now, please?
My name is Barry Mendelowitz, is the pronunciation. I will not comment on anything said by the previous speaker. I'm sure comments should come from the floor during public debate. And I feel this is a meeting... Sorry. for accord and not conflict. And I think interjectors do not help anybody, if I can make comments to those people who've spoken out loud. I'd like to read a small address. It's mainly historical perspective. I believe that the work our subcommittee have done has tried to be unemotional, and the more I thought about it, if ever there was a subject to get emotional about, it was the majestic sight. We have, however, tried to keep emotions out of it, but I'm not surprised that occasionally they do come to the fore. I would like to give notice that I will need extra time later to put some motions to the meeting, and I would also at this point request that the next speaker to be invited is Mr. Michael Blackiston, who had the chair of our subcommittee before I took over. I shall read my short address. Ladies and gentlemen, this meeting is a result of action by our subcommittee, and it is 12 months too late. It was requested because we are unhappy about council activities on the majestic site. We acknowledge the right of the site's owner to develop it. We feel, however, that council's decisions must reflect public opinion on that matter. On a number of occasions, we have called on council to assess public opinion before proceeding with negotiations and making important decisions. To date, the only efforts to assess this opinion, other than at a personal level by individual councillors, has been by our subcommittee. History. The winning design of a hotel casino marina was announced by the Bond Corporation on the December 7th, 1981. Previously, council had been considering a development of 42 units with 40% public open space. This subcommittee was formed on December 9th, 2 days later. A questionnaire canvassed the whole of Applecross without selection opinion in January 1982, attempting to reach 2,000 dwellings and succeeding in about 1,800. This showed overwhelming opposition to the concept of a hotel casino, to a high-rise tower development, and to any proposal which would significantly alter the residential character of the suburb. The findings of this questionnaire, together with a petition calling on council to study the matter, were passed on to council at that time. A public meeting was held on May 5th, having been called by this subcommittee. The meeting was attended by more than 450 people. A number of resolutions were passed in this hall. They were discussed and passed. And in particular, the majority of those present voted, one, to request council to offer to the Bond Corporation a rezoning of the site to enable a development satisfactory to ratepayers, council and the Bond Corporation. Two, to instruct council to rezone the site for single residential development with the normal public open space requirements. And three, to oppose any form of high-rise development on the site. These resolutions were passed on to council for consideration in its deliberation. And we acknowledge that we do not know who made up the body of that audience. It was a public meeting, not a special electors meeting, as has been called tonight. Since that meeting, council has rejected the original proposal on statutory planning requirements. Discussions have taken place with the Bond Corporation to consider a Mediterranean village concept. However, the Bond Corporation has not made any application for rezoning of the site. The council's planning committee has initially appeared very ready to accept this new proposal, with little significant modification and still without seeking public opinion on the matter. It would appear that council has not asked the Bond Corporation to submit a proposal within the provisions of the town planning scheme. We feel that negotiations have been naive and shown little, but I really think no concern for public opinion on the matter. Now, on a number of occasions, we as a subcommittee have been asked by councillors, by ratepayers and the Bond Corporation, what do the ratepayers want? And I thought that we had told them at that public meeting in May of 1982. The current proposal allows not only for a high density residential development, but also incorporates a small commercial area and a tavern. The plot ratio recommended allows for greater development than could otherwise occur in the city, and I think you ought to note that a vote to reduce this plot ratio at a council meeting was defeated by the deciding vote of the mayor. Although public access to this site is provided, there is little public open space and the proposed development will necessitate some filling of the river and the provision of a 125-bay car park in the Jeff Joseph Reserve. We would note that approval for the construction of a marina is outside Council's jurisdiction, but that Council has recommended an 80-pen marina. We do not know the height of the proposed tower development, and we feel, almost in conclusion, that if it had not been for ratepayer intervention, Council would have agreed readily to these proposals in the past. This meeting is the last opportunity to influence Council positively. I would say that there has been criticism of our subcommittee's activities in seeking to preserve an exclusive precinct on the site. We acknowledge that many opinions exist on what should occur there. Our main concern is that ratepayers should know what is proposed and be given a say. I should like later to put some motions to the meeting and hope that voting on them, whichever way it goes, because that's what we want to know and that's what you want to know, will help Council make sound decisions on the matter. Thank you.
I understand Mr. Blackiston would like to speak now as the previous chairman of the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor and councillors, ladies and gentlemen. But certainly, after the last meeting we had a lot of people present, and it was difficult to hand over the chairmanship because we had built up a deal of enthusiasm, and there was a lot of will to do things. However, to find the right person to take over that role was difficult. But Dr. Mendelowitz has pursued this task with vigour, and certainly the results of his efforts can be seen tonight by the number of people present. Just as a sobering thought for the meeting tonight, I would like to cast your minds back to the meeting of the 5th of May. At that meeting, it was stressed that people should consider their questions and try and put them on an objective basis so that we can optimise the benefit of having all these people present. One extra item we have tonight is that we have all the councillors present, and it's a meeting open to the public for the public to question councillors. I stress that the questions should be objective and people should consider what they're asking and optimise the opportunity made available to them tonight. Thank you.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, the opportunity is now for you to speak. Would you please, as I said previously, use the microphones, and would you please first state your name and address before commencing to speak on any subject. Would you like to move this over? Excuse me, Mr. Gribble, the lady over there indicated she wanted to speak. There's a microphone just behind you there, if you wouldn't mind.
My name is Falls, 57 Canning Beach Road, Applecross. There are three parts to the development of the majestic site: the marina, the use of the park for cars, and the building. I'm proposing to talk about the marina only. I have to declare myself against the marina. I see it might be a money spinner for the development company in the rent of pens, but it would cut off some of the river from public access. Even if the title deeds to the majestic land go down to high water mark and a few metres more, they certainly do not include 140 metres out into the Swan and an area of 1.4 hectares, that's nearly 3 acres, of water. That water is public property. And that is the amount of water required on the published plan. This plan is supposed to be a concept only, but it is the only thing that we have to look at. The river belongs to us all. those few places that are still relatively unspoiled, and the river underneath the majestic hill is one of them, should be preserved. They should stay as they are. The river should be freely available. It should not be made smaller by putting spoil on the foreshore, and it should not be walled. Dredging the shallows degrades the ecology of the river, and putting spoil on the banks reduces the water area, and walling it prevents access. From near the university round to the causeway and all the way back on the South Perth side, the river is now walled. The whole of Perth water is walled. Nobody can approach it. There is also a wall on part of the Canning. Over the years, we have lost 1,000 acres or more of water. What would be the cost to taxpayers of dredging this area for the benefit of the development company? It's hard to say, but in 1978, the Public Works Department estimated it would cost between 2 and 3 million for a proposed dredging project at Pelican Rocks. The Majestic proposal is smaller, but my guess is it might cost $500,000. Do we agree with the state spending this amount to enable 80 pen owners to pay $1,000 per boat metre and a yearly rent of, say, $500? The initial pen cost and rent for the first year would probably net the development company some $500,000. And I don't want to hear anybody saying that we've got to do this to keep the employment of the captain of the dredge. Mooring is available at Applecross Jetty. The water is deep enough for any sort of boat that would like to put in there. And yet it is not very much used. Has there been a demand for a marina under the Majestic Hill? How many letters have been received from boat owners wishing to spend this kind of money? I would like this meeting to move that the marina be left out of the plan and that the and that this information be passed on to the Swan River Management Authority. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's my intention that as each speaker does make a point that the chairman of the planning committee or whoever he nominates from his committee may desire to make a statement to maybe assist in what is being said. And Councillor Knowles, do you want to speak on that subject?
The marina does not have the council does not have jurisdiction over the marina, and it's a subject that will be dealt with by another authority. And at this point in the meeting, anyway, I wouldn't want to say anything further. But I'm sure as the meeting progresses along, there'll be ample time for me to comment on all sorts of things, including perhaps some comments on the marina, but not at this stage.
Mr. Gribble, did you want to speak? Accept that as a motion if someone would like to second it, but I do want to just amplify the point that Councillor Knowles has made, that this council has no jurisdiction whatsoever as far as the marina is concerned. In other words, this local authority is only by statute permitted to deal with any land which is above high water mark. Now, the marina is in the river, and we have, as a local authority, no control nor any say in what happens in that river. So I just want to make that point, but I'm quite happy to receive a motion if someone will be prepared to second it. Yes, go ahead.
We've already acknowledged the marina is not under council's jurisdiction. However, they've discussed it at planning meetings. They've recommended 80 pens rather than 160. The matter is among those motions I wish to put. I'm reasonably happy that the motions that we have prepared will cover, and they are not objectively to defeat any purpose. I say that again, that we're looking for accord, not conflict. We do have a number of motions, and I'm in no way asking people not to put motions, but I would have preferred, if it were up to me personally, to see some discussion and some answers from the planners and from Bond Corporation so that people know. Particularly, I was a bit disappointed that our colleague here could not finish his presentation of what was involved, because, you know, I won't say it again, I think you've got to know exactly what's proposed. But we have prepared motions that we hope will come up with some accord on how you feel, and I would ask if it's possible to have some open discussion with answers to questions before motions are put. But the council have made recommendations on the marina.
As far as the motions are concerned, I've already told the doctor that if he likes to move after there is some reasonable discussion or questions asked, that he'd be in a position to move the motion or motions that he desires to make. So that he's made the point now that perhaps it would be better to have any ratepayer at all that wants to have his or her say on this particular subject to have it now, and at the conclusion then come up with any motions that you want to come before the chair from the floor. So you're quite happy with that procedure? Well, could I have, please, some... Well, at the present moment, I've asked for a seconder and there hasn't been a seconder. Well, it has been moved and seconded. If you want me to put the motion, well, I'll put it on the basis of it'll be necessary to record who is voting and who is voting against the particular motion. Unless we can be quite clear that as far as the motions are concerned, that by a show of hands is for electors only. We'll go from there. Yes. I'm quite happy for him to now give you the detail of the, in other words, foreshadow his motions, so that that may clear the air. You want to do that now?
Motion number four of 73 motions we have, of 10 motions we have to put. This meeting opposes the construction of any form of marina adjacent to the site.
As a mover of the motion, are you quite happy that that will come forth eventually with the other motions? You've got the answer there. Right, well, it was my intention to put the motion. All those in favour, would you please raise your right hand? Beg your pardon? Well, could I just have one at a time, please, and then I'll be able to answer. Yes, please. Would you like to repeat the motion?
The motion as recorded was moved by Mrs. Forbes of 57 Canning Beach Road, seconded from the floor, that the marina be deleted from the proposed Majestic Site Development Plan and this information be forwarded to the Swan River Management Authority.
Does anyone wish to speak to that particular motion? I'm sorry, it wasn't withdrawn. I asked the mover whether or not she wanted to let it lie until such time as all the various other motions were forthcoming, and she said no, she wanted the motion put now, and I'm proceeding in that direction. Yes?
My name's Andrew Davenport, 35, the Promenade, Mount Pleasant. I think the Mason really doesn't have any bearing on the whole situation at all, because as far as I know, is that Mr. Bond or anybody else who's developing anything along the riverfront has got no jurisdiction over it whatsoever, because I know of a fact down there where the Raffles Hotel is, some people wanted to put some sand along the foreshore there, and they were told to go and jump in the lake, or the river more or less, because they weren't allowed to do it. It was all under Harbour and Lights jurisdiction. So I don't see how Mr. Bond or anybody else would have any jurisdiction down on the foreshore where you're talking about an apple crushing. So I'm speaking against the motion.
Thank you. Are there any other speakers?
Chairman, I'm speaking in support of the motion put up by Mrs. Falls, irrespective of the last speaker.
Name and address first, please.
Mr. A.D. Holder, 68 Bateman Road, Mount Pleasant. I'm an elector and a ratepayer. Irrespective of the last speaker, and I know very well that the Melbourne City Council has no jurisdiction of what might be decided in the marina. But the motion has been put by Mrs. Falls to this meeting for the council to record, and I think that's the point of issue. And I would suggest that the motion be put, and please, if there's further discussion about it. We know very well that the council has no jurisdiction over this, but it's a public meeting. She has put this motion opposing the marina, and let's find out what the electors think about that. Thank you.
On that basis, do I take it that no one else wants to speak? Yes, okay, please.
My name is Keane. I live in Drew Road, 19 Drew Road, Ardross. I would like to know from the Bond Corporation developers what investigations have taken place into the proposal for the marina. Has the matter been discussed, and have any decisions been arrived at with the Swan River Management Authority or with the Department of Marine and Harbours? Have their planning engineers done any work at all on the change in river flows or the amount of siltation which may or may not occur in the area, and in the area of other boats which may be moored in that vicinity? Is there any other information which is available to the council or to the developers which should be made known to this meeting? Thank you.
Would someone like to speak on that subject from the Bond Corporation?
Well, obviously the homework's been done. We can, if the meeting wishes, I'll ask Mr. Terry Martin, the planner for the development, to come and give precise details. I guess it depends how long you've got. Most certainly the homework has been done. We don't go into these things lightly. Would you like the formal details, Mr. Chairman? Fine. Mr. Martin.
Mr. Mayor, ladies and gentlemen, the work that has been done on investigation of the marina amounts, first of all, to conceptual studies which are recorded there and have been described to the council in some detail. Secondly, there has been discussion with the Swan River Management Authority, the Lands Department, and the Department of Marine and Harbours as to the location of a marina in that place. The work that would have to be done, first of all, to assure the public authorities that the nature of the work could be reconciled with the the expected natural attributes of the river remaining in the close vicinity to it. The engineers for Bond Corporation have conducted examinations into the type of structure that would be built in that place. In the first instance, this was envisaged and engineered as a floating marina. And I would correct Mrs. Falls in the point that it was not to be a public work or carried out at public expense. It was to be an expense of the development. The question of siltation, which the questioner raised on the effect of dredging, as most of you know in that vicinity, if you know the site at all well, that it is limestone rock for the most part, above sands of different types, so that the rock would have to be removed to a depth of 2 to 3 metres through the area, right up to the existing foreshore, which would be filled in part and would be excavated. Bond's ownership and some part coming out. The siltation flow studies, those have to be developed to the point that if the concept of this form of development is agreed upon by other authorities as well as this council, then it is worthwhile proceeding to do the expensive hydrological work that would be necessary to prove up the conservation aspects of the marina. But sufficient work has been done at this time by the engineers and in consultation with public authorities to see that there is some basis for believing that Swan River Management Authority and other public departments involved would be prepared to see a marina located at that point. Thank you.
There was someone else here that wanted to speak. Would you like to speak? Please?
The marina also poses a problem with people travelling to and from. Traffic is my main problem. I live in Reynolds Road, Applecross.
Thank you.
Which has been turned from a quiet little street some 30 years ago into a main highway now where I can hardly sleep at night. Now this marina and the whole concept must be realised. The increased traffic in that area is one of the main problems. We must find a way in and out of that point without making it too noisy for people to live. And also, having been trained by the taxpayers as a safety man, have you thought of the difficulties in the event of a catastrophe in that area of emergency vehicles getting to and from? I feel that I oppose the marina primarily on the point that it will increase traffic even further than the building itself.
Thank you. Yes, please.
Now, I'm John Beard of 6 Fraser Road. When dealing with the question of the marina, the meeting must realise that it has implications and that we are not dealing with just purely a marina alone. Now, as we have just heard, the marina will have not only to be dredged, but to be blasted and excavated as well. The question then arises, what are they going to do with the dredging spoil? it would almost certainly double the cost of the enterprise for this spoil to be carted away. Therefore, they would propose to dump it on the foreshore. Now, a plan has existed for some time, which shows filling in of the river occasioned by the marina in the vicinity. It is possibly that one of those plans which is over there. If so, that is the first time that that plan has been on public view. Such a plan has existed for some months. Copies of it have been given to each of the councillors, but the public have been denied permission to look at it. I know ratepayers who have been to the council chambers and have asked to see that plan. The town clerk has refused to show it to them, and in one case it was even denied that the plan existed. Nonetheless, it is there. The fact is that if you are going to have a marina, you have got to do something with the dredging spoil. And if we have a marina, therefore, I cannot see that we can avoid the implication that they are going to fill in the river between the majestic site and the Applecross jetty. They have to do that partly to dispose of the spoil and partly in order to comply with certain regulations. The Swan River Management Authority has dredging regulations. One of these prohibits the dumping of dredging spoil in deeper parts of the river. A second one prohibits the dumping of it on the foreshore under any circumstances where it could be eroded back into the river by tidal erosion and so on. Therefore, the Bond Corporation, who, as we have heard, have done their homework very thoroughly, have provided for a sea wall to be built all along the front of the majestic site too, but also across to the Applecross jetty. This partly, of course, to dispose of the limestone excavated from the marina site, and partly to act as a retaining wall to include the dredging spoil which will be put behind it, and thus comply with the management authority's provisions. So, if we are having a marina, we have to have filling in of the river, and if up to a sea wall, and further, that means that we are going to lose the natural beach in that part of the area, which is used by so many people, prawners, fishermen, joggers, children playing, children swimming. Everybody values that natural beach. We shall lose it. It will just become a wall. And unless the most stringent undertakings can be given, that the dredging spoil is to be otherwise disposed of, and that the river is not under any circumstances to be filled in, and in particular that the natural beach is to be preserved, I ask you then to support this motion.
Are there any other speakers? Yes, please.
Ted Martin, 30 Kintore Road, Applecross. Now, there are two subjects that have not, or two items that have not been brought up yet, which must have been dealt with, and I would like to know what the Bond Corporation suggests in these lines. Firstly, Kintore Road is going to be an access road from Canning Bridge. Tweedale Road is the next road down, which is also going to be vitally affected. We have bottlenecks repeatedly occurring in these two centres, and there must be either an alteration to that road there, or expansion of Risley Street or Reynolds Road to take away the additional traffic which is going to come from the 148 extra residents plus the other conveniences of the marina. Now, I've heard, of course, only the usual rumours, that there is going to be a certain amount of the Kintore Road widened and the Tweedale Road widened. Now, I'd like to say that I am only one of a lot of Kintore Road residents that I have discussed the matter with, and they're not present at this meeting tonight, but I can assure you that their opinion is this, that any widening of Kintore Road is going to add an extra hazard to the bottleneck at the bottom, which is leads straight into the Canning Bridge. Now, I should say this. Probably this has been looked at by Mr. Bond. He's probably been in touch with the Main Road Board. He's probably got their advice as what's to happen. But we've seen nothing at all on that. There's one other point, too, that does occur, which is vital, and that's whenever there's an accident, which there are quite a lot, between Canning Bridge and the Canning Highway, the whole of the traffic is directed down Kintail Road. Now, I've seen in front of my place, which is two blocks from the Raffles Hotel, I've seen the whole of the stream of traffic building up there on a normal day from 8 o'clock till nearly 8:45. The other factor, too, apart from noise and other disruptions that we may be faced with, I'm two streets away from the Raffles Hotel. In front of my own home, I've had the lamppost knocked down by persons coming out after being in a semi-intoxicated condition. I've had the whole of my barge board torn off my front of my house because the poles have been torn down, which I've had to repair myself. And I know the amount of traffic there. That's not satisfactory at present. What is Bond Corporation going to do to put it right so that they can have a proper access to a marina if they're allowed, or to the extra traffic which is going to come from the present proposed scheme? I'm neither for nor against. I'll say this, that most of my neighbours are against the scheme, but I'm still open-minded. If I can see some reasonable approach to that, I'd like to know it now.
Is the Bond Corporation in a position to make a statement in that regard?
Obviously, Mr. Manton, the council listened to you somewhat when they asked us not to build a hotel there because they knew of the sort of problems you were encountering down in your part of the world. Mr. Uloth is our traffic consultant, and he's here and will answer the specific questions.
Mr. Mayor, residents, I prepared on behalf of Bond Corporation this report, and figure 4 shows the existing traffic flows within Applecross. Kintail Road is a declared urban arterial road and carries 5,500 vehicles just east of Ardross and 7,400 vehicles just west of Canning Highway. For an urban arterial road, these traffic volumes are relatively low. A two-lane highway can carry approximately 12,000 vehicles. The majestic development will add approximately 1,000 vehicles to Kintail Road. And from a traffic point of view, not from an environmental point of view, there is no problem. No widening of Kintail Road is required. Somebody else brought up the question of the marina traffic, and we estimate that the marina, as proposed, will attract 80 cars per day, per weekday. Well, the marina is for the use of the residents. These 80 cars are from outside. Thank you.
I think, ladies and gentlemen, we've had a reasonable discussion. Could we make this the last one, please, before putting the motion?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. My name is Knight. I live at 61 The Strand. I'm one of those who will be directly affected by a marina development, since traffic will pass by my front door, and also the proposed car park. It's not been satisfactorily answered in my mind, and my question, therefore, to Mr. Beckwith is, to what extent does the viability of any development on the Majestic Hill depend upon the development of a marina? And to what extent does the proposed development of a car park on the Jeff Joseph Reserve depend, A, on the marina, and B, by deleting the marina, what would be the residual extent of a car park associated with the development on the Majestic Hotel site? Thank you.
Councillor Knowles, the Chairman of the Planning Committee, has some comment to make here first of all, and then if the Bond Corporation would like to speak, please.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I don't want to speak on the viability of the Bond development in regard to the marina because that's not something that's in my capabilities to do, but there have been two or three people now mention the car park on the Jeff Joseph Reserve, and I would like to assure the meeting that the car parking provisions that this council has written into the bond development or our conditional support of the bond development requires that all the cars that are going to be generated by the people that live there and the services that will attract people to the site, namely the tavern, the two restaurants, and including the marina, all of the parking provisions for those vehicles are within the bonds site. The council has seen fit to discuss with the corporation the upgrading of the Jeff Joseph Reserve, which I'm sure you would all agree. Well, many people would agree, could do with it is my opinion that many people it is my opinion and the opinion of council that many people would agree that the Jeff oh do you mind that the Jeff Joseph Reserve could do with upgrading. It was created some 10 or 15 years ago by the dredging of sand from the river and is in a less than happy state. Now, the car parking that we have spoken to the Bond Corporation about is a car park that will be created. The number of bays that has been discussed is a maximum number of bays, and that was 125. We are not certain at this stage what the final number would be, but in order to give the Bond Corporation costs to work within, we have said that we would not be seeking more than 125 public parking bays for people wanting to use that upgraded park. Now, the upgrading of the park is the... Come on, do you want to... The upgrading of the park is still to be decided. It is to be done jointly by the council and the Bond Corporation through a... The park is to be upgraded.
I would suggest that you give all speakers the opportunity at least to have their say.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I think perhaps a point of explanation should be given that I happen to be the chairman of the planning committee, and at this point in time I'm speaking on behalf of the council. Now, there is not every single item that the council has agreed to in this proposal that I personally endorse, but I'm speaking here in regard to a package of proposals that the council at this point in time has seen to give conditional support to, and I'm trying to explain some of that package to you. What I was trying to say was that the whole of the Jeff Joseph Reserve is to be subject to a study to upgrade it, to make it more useful, to make it more attractive. And that will create the need for people... There was questions asked about the parking of vehicles and the need for 125 parking bays on the Jeff Joseph Reserve, and was that in fact being brought about because of the development? And the answer to that is no, it is not. They are totally additional to the parking requirements that the Bond Corporation must meet, statutory requirements that they must meet under the town planning scheme. The 125 maximum on Jeff Joseph Reserve are those that will be required for people who don't live on the site, who don't go and buy things or go to the marina. They just want to enjoy the park there and the environment that will be created. And it is all to be contained in a study that is still to be done. And that study will be done, carried out jointly between the Bond Corporation and the Council. And just one further point while I'm talking on the upgrading of the park, I'd like to point out to Mr. Hare, I think it was, that this council has not decided those lines on the map that he's referring to. They are simply some concepts that could be done. The study of the park is still to be carried out. And it would be my estimate, Mr. Hare, that the amount of stuff that comes out of the river would be perhaps 100 times in excess of what will be required to be placed adjacent to any wall. I should also point out that it was not the intention of the council for the wall to be running the full length of the foreshore from the Majestic site to the Applecross jetty, and that statement appears in council records of many, many months ago. The wall, in fact, may run some metres back from the foreshore, but not necessarily having an interface with the river for the full length of the wall. There are many aspects in regard to this part of the proposal which are still to be decided and are subject to further studies and examinations. It will not be the Bond Corporation that decides what will take place on the Jeff Joseph Reserve. It will be the Council that decides what will take place on that reserve after we have carried out detailed studies by competent people, planners and landscape planners as well. Thank you.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, I think there's been fair opportunity to make comment on this motion that's been moved. I'll ask the Deputy Town Clerk to now read this motion that was moved and seconded and has been discussed before I put it to the vote.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The motion was moved, Mrs. Forbes, and seconded from the floor that the marina be deleted from the Majestic Hotel site development plan and this information be forwarded to the Swan River Management Authority.
That is the motion that I intend putting before you now. All those in favour of the motion? Is that ready to count? I think we can go the other way. Those against the motion, I would say the motion is carried. Can we now proceed with any other subject as far as this matter is concerned here tonight? Any other speakers?
I know I've spoken once before tonight. Andrew Davenport, 35.
I'm only allowing you to speak again on the fact that there is another subject that you wish to present. Is that right?
No. Altogether, nothing to do with that.
No, but you want to raise another subject?
Yes.
Right, I'm giving you the okay to go ahead now and present that subject.
The subject is that I think I've heard enough tonight, and I feel a bit sorry for my mayor and all the councillors up there. It's obviously the floor is loaded, and it wouldn't matter what anybody said about the Bond Corporation. They wouldn't be in the race anyway. Not that I'm for them. I'm only just an ordinary resident, and I just can't be bothered listening to any more of this. No. I'm entitled to say I pay my rates. Do you pay yours? Well, all I can say is that all I can see around here is a lot of grey-headed women and old men that wouldn't have any interest in what goes on up in Applecross anyway.
Yes, please. Please, can we allow the speaker here now?
Yes, Mr. Mayor. One aspect I think that's salient, as far as I'm concerned.
Would you mind giving your name and address?
Yes, Joseph Stokes, 23 Gairlock Street, Applecross. I think a fundamental matter with any development of the Majestic site is the question of public access. Traditionally, over many years, we've had public access to the site, whether it's to watch the passing show, the regattas, the yachts on the river, to admire the beautiful view, simply to relax with families, perhaps to have a few drinks, and generally enjoy the environment in that area. So it seems to me that any scheme for the development of the site must take into account this fundamental aspect. And I'd like, in the communication we had from Dr. Mendelowitz's planning committee, he makes the point that 10% public open space does not accrue as there is no subdivision. Now, if I understand that correctly, if I understand him correctly, the Bond Corporation's chief spokesman stated that there would be 20% of the area set aside for the public. I'd like to have these matters clarified. I think this is a very important question, Mr. Mayor.
I'd ask the Bond Corporation to answer that question, please.
Mayor, ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Mendelowitz's circular was correct in that 10% public open space is given as a condition of subdivision approval when there is subdivision. In this case, there is to be no subdivision, so that 10% would not fall. However, the development has been prepared in a way in which 20% of the site will in fact be zoned for public open space and the public will have access over it forever. There is a plan here on the bottom left-hand corner which has got a dark green shading around the foreshore and through the site. There is an area of just over 19.6% of the site, an area which is coloured green, and that will go to the council by way of a public easement, and the public will have traffic over it by foot, by vehicle. And in fact, there will be even more space and underground garages which will be open to the public as well. I know that the site has been open for many years and been used by the public as public open space, and by reserving 20% of it in this case, or providing it for it to be zoned for public open space, that character is retained in this development.
Thank you. Other speakers?
Pamela Leeper, Fraser Road, Applecross. I hope I have enough spring in my step and colour in my hair for the gentleman at the back. And I put this question to Mr. Howson as the mayor, as the leader of our council. And I also put this question to you now, having not had the opportunity to do so before. Given that the council, in 1967, approved the idea of rezoning the Majestic site residential, why did you subsequently reject the two proposals which Admont put forward as recently as 1980, giving 40% public space and building only 48 residential units? Admont, Mr. Beckwith, presumably found this a viable proposition. I suggest this would have met with no opposition from the residents. The contrast with the present proposal, in terms of its impact on the environment and area, having been gone into at length, I will now put my repeat my question. What possible reason could you, our council, have for rejecting the former proposal and accepting this one, which allows only 20% public open space and triples the residential units? Thank you.
The answer to that question is that the Admont did not ever come up with a final decision as far as what they were going to do on that particular stage before it was purchased by the Bond Corporation. In other words, the council was negotiating with Admont over a period of months, and suddenly, without the knowledge of the council, we suddenly heard and found out that the Bond Corporation had purchased the block of land. So the answer is we didn't ever get to the stage of finalising negotiation with Admont to determine what should go on that particular site.
Mr. Mayor, my name's Hillman from 3 The Strand, Applecross. I'm a resident there.
Point of order, Mr. Mayor. I don't know whether I have a point of order here, but I would like to make the point.
No, you haven't got a point of order, but by the same token, if you want another answer, yes.
Well, I gather...
Would you mind just waiting a moment?
I'm sorry.
Thank you.
I gather from this article that council requested 60% of open space as a condition of the passing of the Admont proposal. Is this correct? And if so, why are we now looking at this proposal? Thank you.
Well, all I'm suggesting is if you're reading from the newspaper, don't believe everything you see in the newspaper. It gets right back to what I said initially, and I was chairman of the committee at the particular stage, and I'll say it again if you want me to, that not at any stage was finalisation agreed with the Admont people, and nor was there any percentage agreed upon or even to the stage of whether it was going to be 60%, 100% or any percent. So the answer to the question is exactly what I said before. There was a great deal of negotiation that went on with the council asking Admont to fall in line reasonably well with the proposal that had been put up to them, and not at any stage did they, Admont, agree with what the council suggested. And the council suggested that there should be a great deal of public open space available for the people who, in the terms of my statement in the newsletter at one stage, was the fact that it had been available, that particular area, for the people of Western Australia since the turn of the century, and that I hoped it would continue to be used that way. So the answer is it was never agreed that it be any percentage, whether it be 60% or any other percentage. It was still under negotiation when, without any previous knowledge, suddenly, in the newspaper or somewhere or other, the council found out it had been sold. Would you like to proceed now, please?
Thank you, sir. My name is Hillman. I live at 3 The Strand, Applecross, in a house owned by Peter Ken Proprietary Limited, who has given me proxy to speak for it and vote for it at this meeting. I wanted to say that I felt that your answer when I first came up to the previous question was the most unconvincing and unsatisfactory answer to any question that I've ever heard in my life. In regard to the second answer which you gave to the lady when she returned, I quote from a letter dated October the 14th, 1980, addressed to the manager, Admont Proprietary Limited, 222 Canning Highway, Claremont, signed by Ralph H. Farden, Town Clerk, in which he says, inter alia, to assist the committee, would you kindly provide confirmation in writing of the availability to the council, free of cost, approximately 40% of the site for public space. So it appears that 40% was being asked by the council despite your previous answer just a moment ago. I can't for the life of me imagine why a council should be asking for 40% public open space from one developer who proposes to put up about 48 residential units, and knocking that one back, or you say it was never knocked back because no firm negotiations were ever completed. But Admont, I understood, negotiated for 2 years without being able to really get through to the council, and the council didn't knock it back, but it made it so difficult by being unequivocal about it that it was virtually knocked back. And now the council, why it should give time of day to this proposal before us now of 142 units, plus a tavern, plus all the other mods and cons, the two restaurants and the marina, I can't imagine why they should give time of day to it. Now, the bond man just told us that 20% open space is being provided under this scheme. Let me draw the attention of the meeting to the fact that normally when open space is given by a subdivider, that open space is given in addition to or outside the provision of roads and footpaths and so on. Now, the 20% open space which the Bond Corporation gentleman is talking about at the moment is 20%, which is roads and footpaths, access into garages and so on. That's not public open space. Now, instead of us getting 40% of that site for open space, what seems to be now proposed is that we give back to Bond 40% of Jeff Joseph's reserve, and that's just not on.
Are there any other speakers now, please? Any subject? This gentleman down here, I think, has been trying for some time to say something.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, I would like to make a...
I beg your pardon?
Name and address.
Oh, yeah. My name is Kennedy. N.E. Kennedy for the promenade. I would just like to... There's been a lot of talk about how much open space and about marinas and what have you. I would like to talk about our foreshore. Once, years ago, everybody had access to the river. Anywhere, anytime, any place. Now, at the present time, from Canning Bridge to the Causeway, you can say it, there's no access to the river, virtually none. Now, the developers, as we call them, we had a different name for them when I was a young fella, they are starting on the Applecross Peninsula. Now, if you look at the map, you'll find that this peninsula is a rather unique. It's not many years ago before... I wouldn't dream that anybody could interfere with Applecross. I thought it was a place that was set aside where no big roads would go through. It would never be interrupted. But I had to learn, like we all do. Now, on the eastern point of the peninsula, we have this majestic site. There'd been a lot of talk about marinas and open space or anything else, but nobody has talked about the river much or about its access or what we used to think was our natural right to our natural heritage. Now, it's in the pipeline that the western end of the peninsula is going to go. And we all know where that is. Now, if we yield the eastern end of the peninsula to the Bond Corporation for their big what have you, and that is the edge of the wedge, not the tip of the iceberg, and we get one on the other end, we'll find, within a space of one decade, the whole of the Applecross Peninsula will be taken up with high-rise developments without any shadow of a doubt whatsoever. The developers have exploited all the areas outside, in the outer fringe of the metropolitan area, and now they're turning back into the city. And this place, Applecross, as a prime target. And if we allow this development to take place, I'm not interested about their marina or what have you. I'm interested about the public access to our river. And I think that the whole of the peninsula will, within one decade, be closed off, and anybody who's living there as a private citizen will move off because they'll have to.
A big fan.
And so I don't think the meeting should be very concerned about how much open space they're going to have. I think the main thing is to stop this encroachment upon our natural heritage, because once that corner goes, they'll start from the other corner, and I don't have to spell it out to you what public land is going to be sold down there. And they'll start from the eastern end of the peninsula, and the whole of the foreshore right across the Applecross Peninsula will be absorbed by so-called developers, who, in my opinion, the only development they do is their bank account.
Mr. Mayor, my name is Bill Braithwaite. My wife and I have been ratepayers for something over 30 years. We live at the bottom end of Ardra Street towards the jetty. We're familiar with the area generally, and one or two things have been said tonight, which I think I'd like a couple of questions first. Apropos the car park in the park by the jetty, 125 cars, I'm not quite sure what the combination between the council and the bond corporation is, or why any consultation should be necessary. I think the people who the council should consult with about that particular type of development should be the residents of the area. Further to that, I would like to ask how many garage and car parking spaces are being provided on the development site by the Bond Corporation under the plan which I understand the council are thinking strongly of recommending.
Bond Corporation, could you answer those questions, please?
I understand the council have them in minutes. I understand the minutes will be here tonight.
The number of parking bays that are required under Scheme 2 of the Melville Town Planning Scheme is 534, and the number that has been provided in the development at 142 dwelling units plus the reduced number of shops, etc., and based on an 80 pen marina, the number provided is 578.
Have I lost the power? No. Further to that, I'm just interested because before somebody said earlier tonight, and I think from the Bond Corporation that they were the traffic planner, that they were providing for about 80 cars per day at the marina, I'd only allowed 40 parking spaces for that. But adding the rest of the stuff, what they would reasonably require for the type of units being provided in the number, the number of parking spaces for a modest-sized tavern, the number of parking spaces for a modest-sized restaurant related to the expense of the ground and that sort of thing, the number of parking spaces required for a function centre of any consequence, which it would need to be in that sort of area, the number of parking spaces required for a health club, which is also built into the plan, and I think we've seen these squash courts and things around the metropolitan area get some idea, not to speak of several shops and the marina, I make it conservatively about 750 car spaces. And it seems strange to me that the 530 or so that are being provided, and they've knocked on another 125 by arrangement with the council in the park, is still going to be a little bit short. However, I just mentioned that in passing. What I would like to say is that the council seem to be faced with three choices in this matter. Firstly, it's zoned as a hotel site, and the requirements for zoning in a hotel site are fairly well laid down. They could possibly be varied to some small degree, but I don't think they should be varied greatly. It's interesting to note that a hotel site, if a hotel was permitted in the current zoning, and I don't suppose anyone could refuse it, would only cover 25% of the area, which would leave a lot of open space there. The second alternate would seem to be what has been discussed, that is to say, changing the zoning at the request of the Bond Corporation or a request of anybody who might own it to a residential site. And if it was changed to a residential site, a fairly reasonable and decent and really concessional number of units would be the 142 that are envisaged at the moment. They would average on the plot ratio involved with the additional plot ratio which the council are offering, which is to say 0.8, they would average just over 17 squares each. So they'd be reasonable size units, and the 142 units would seem to cut out that site. The question of viability has come up from time to time through the night about it, and I think, as Mr. Hillman said, if 40-odd units were going to be viable at one stage, I can't imagine that 142 units wouldn't be viable now. There are sort of figures that can back this one up and it comes into multi-millions in the end, but that's another thing. The third proposition is that the council seem to be toying with now is a hotspot. That's a residential site with a normal number of units or an excessive, slightly excessive number of units which would be normal for the area involved. But then, a marina, squash courts or health club, tavern, restaurant, function centre, all these are in excess of what would normally be available in the site. And these are a concession beyond the wildest dreams of King Midas, because to buy a site for a squash court down the highway, or buy a reasonably site restaurant site, or buy a tavern site in the area, are all fairly expensive propositions these days. Now, why the council has to consult with the bond corporation again as to whether these things should be put in there or not, and why they don't consult with the council, the ratepayers in the council, I don't know. But what I would like to know is there anyone that lives in the vicinity of the jetty, or the general area of the whole of Melville? Bearing in mind we've got one big aquatic place down there on the Canning River with plenty of parking, plenty of road access, and it's popular in use. We don't need another aquatic centre. There's a yacht club which has still got vacancies, and I don't doubt by arrangement with the council and Swan River Board they might extend the pens there. I don't know. I don't think it's up to the Melville Council to provide aquatic centres for the rest of the metropolitan area. Let some other council provide them if they want them. What I don't believe is that there are many, very many people at all in the Melville area, and specifically in the Applecross area, adjacent to the, historically around the majestic site, that want a marina. I don't know of anybody. No one's ever mentioned to me, and I speak to a lot of people in my time about the missing one. Nobody that I know wants a tavern there particularly. Nobody wants a restaurant there particularly, I don't think. But there it is. Why are the council shifting from either a basic plain hotel zoning, which it is now, or changing it to a basic residential site of reasonable density and leave it at that? Why do they go for this hotspots thing, which seems to require all sorts of concessions from the council to the ratepayer, but not only from them, the concessions...